You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, Sam, it's been a while.
Hey, it has been. How's business?
I don't know about you, but finding the perfect place to expand has been a real struggle for us.
Try Ohio. The Jobs Ohio team helped us isolate the right incentives and opportunities by understanding us and our goals.
Wow, maybe we should move to Ohio.
The business climate, quality of life, and help from Jobs Ohio made Ohio our best decision yet. Hey, where are you going?
I gotta call my boss, then Jobs Ohio.
Visit successinohio.com to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori, Vuori.com/Spotify.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. All of us Broadway fans have Seth Rudetsky and James Wesley to thank for much of the entertainment during this COVID pandemic. Their wildly successful Stars in the House live stream concert series has played nearly every day since last March, and it's raised over $750,000 for the Actors Fund and other notable organizations. Today, I am so excited to welcome these two guys who have done so much for the Broadway industry for decades and have given of themselves and their talent in front of and behind the curtain. So welcome, James and Seth, to the Broadway Gives Back podcast.
Thanks, Jan.
Hi, Jan.
Hey. So I want to talk about something that's super timely and relevant, first of all. We're recording this podcast 2 days after President Biden's inauguration. let's say that again, President Biden and Vice President Harris. and politics is something you guys have been involved in for a long time. So quick factoid. You two produced two amazing Broadway segments that are very near and dear to my heart because my fiance hired you guys to do the Broadway What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love for the Democratic Convention in 2016. And then you just did Seasons of Love and Let the Sunshine In mashup for the inauguration 2 days ago. So I was so blown away. I loved both performances so much. But I will say the one 2 days ago, you guys had a very, I know this because I was listening to Glenn, you guys had like 5 minutes to prepare for this. How did that come about? It looks like it was took months to prepare. But how did you get all that amazing talent and how did you put it together?
Oh my gosh.
Well, first of all, shout out to you because Glenn said he was actually nervous that we had so little time. And he wrote to me and he said, but Jan said, if anyone can do it, it's Seth and James. So actually, you're sort of responsible for it happening.
Okay, that is true. He was scratching his head and I said, honey, maybe I should try it. He goes, no. I said, well, the only people that really could pull this off would be Seth and James. So that's where they went.
It. You know, of course, the first song I thought of was What the World Needs Now is Love. Because I'm like, that was always our dream to do it at the Hillary inauguration. I'm like, mm-hmm. Wow, that would be an amazing bookend if we get to do it again. And then James was like, I don't know why. It was sort of like,
well, I said it was really connected to 2016 and this is new and different. And we're obviously in a much different place than we were 4 years ago. And so
he put the kibosh on it. So then I remember that, you know, you may know that on Inauguration Day 2017, James and I did a segment called Concert for America. And even before then, one of our signature, we always would end basically every concert we've ever done with Let the Sunshine In because it's just, it's such a joyous song.
And so full of hope.
And full of hope. So I thought, oh, we should do Let the Sunshine In. But whenever we do our charity concerts, we always say, listen, everybody, we love the song, but basically ignore every single lyric for the first four verses because they are so surreal.
Crazy.
It's like, you know, outer space, sitar, just the weirdest lyrics. I'm like, I don't think we can get away with singing that because I can't tell America, hey, by the way, ignore what we're singing right now. And then, so I was like, oh my God. I was like, the Fifth Dimension did Aquarius into Let the Sunshine In. I'm like, we can totally do that. It's a perfect combination. So we were waiting for the phone call back and
I texted her and of course, all of us know that, and we probably only know a smidge of the trouble and craziness of the transition. And so basically, I don't know if we fell off the radar, but we definitely were not a priority, which we completely understood. And we were disappointed, but we got it. And then
I knew Ricky would be working on it, Ricky and Glenn. So I just wrote to Ricky and I said, by the way, I said, if you really ever do need any Broadway help, like we could just pull something together if you need it. But then I was like, why am I even writing him? Like he does a Tony Awards. Like he could do it himself. It's very like, he doesn't need my help. But I was like, I'll just say like, we're willing to help if you need any help.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then on what day was it?
It was the 13th, January 13th.
Which is what?
Exactly a week before inauguration.
I got an email from Ricky saying, can you call me at 4:30? And of course I got the email at 6 because I'm literally still on AOL and it comes in like 3 hours
later.
So mortifying. I can't get it together to like go to something newfangled like Yahoo. Anyway, so I called him back. He wasn't there. And then we started doing, and I was like, oh my God, I think maybe it's about the inauguration. And then we were doing Stars in the House, our live stream. And the phone rang and I didn't recognize the number.
And it was like 8:03. So we had just started it at 8:00.
We were on doing the live stream, but as soon as I saw it, I didn't recognize it. I'm like, I got to take this call. So I literally left the live stream. I was like, James, I got to take this.
So literally the first time, Dan, in like over 300 episodes, Seth got up from in the middle of the live stream. We're live. It's not, you know, and he got up and it was just me. I took over the show by myself for like 10 minutes while he was talking to Ricky.
And he was like, you know, he said, when we're streaming the show, we're not going to have any commercials. So we need to fill those commercial slots. What would you think of that could fill a Broadway segment? And
I just want to interrupt and say that only on the networks were there commercial breaks, but everywhere else, it was actually part of the show. So only on CBS, NBC, and ABC. So really, you were part of the main show. So it's not just a commercial break. So.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. See, of course, you know, like my AOL, I don't really understand the difference between streaming and network. So I'm like, whatevs. So I was like, what the heck? So first I thought he meant to fill all those slots. So the first thing I thought of was like, oh, Wheels of a Dream. And he was like, oh, wow, Soaks and Audra for that one slot. I said, oh, wait. I said, if it's only one slot, I said, it shouldn't be a duet. I said, it really needs to be a group number with all these Broadway people that are out of work and singing something joyous. What about Aquarius, Let the Sunshine In? And he was like, oh, wow, sounds like a great idea. But no commitment, just like sounds good. But wait, it's a week before. I don't know why he didn't just say right away, yes, do it. Instead, he was like, I don't know, take your time. So then the next day I was like,
So Ricky called Glenn, and this is on what I'm hearing on my end. Ricky calls Glenn. And I talked to, you know, because they had decided that they were going to go to you. And then they're saying, yeah, the Age of Aquarius, Let the Sunshine In. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. And Glenn is like, the stars are in planets and I don't understand this. And I said, but honey, it actually is the Age of Aquarius now. He goes, no, this is way too woo-woo. So everybody started talking and I heard them talking about Seasons of Love. And of course, you know, we all love that song. And then came up with that idea too.
Interesting. Well, the next day I sent Ricky the video of Georgia. We just done this video of Georgia on my mind.
Yep.
For Stacey Abrams, and I said, this is sort of like what it would look like. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, it backfired because it was like, this video was put together over 10 days. And Ricky's like, haha, you don't have 10 days. You can't take that long. And I was like, that's not the point of the video. I was like, we can do it in a short amount of time.
And by the way, the 10 days was over Thanksgiving. You know, it was it took longer because of that. And by the way, we had 60 people in it. So, which of course makes it a little bit longer.
But James, by the way, it was so spectacular, the Georgia on My Mind.
Georgia on My Mind, thank you.
Thank you.
But by the way, this is our signature. I mean, James, just take 2 seconds off to just talk about Voices for the Voiceless. And when we had that phone call with the superpowers.
So the first time that we did...
James and I really teamed up together on a charity event, right?
Right. So the first time that Seth and I worked on a big charity event was in 2015, in the spring of 2015, for this organization called You Gotta Believe, which is the only organization in New York that works exclusively with finding older foster youth forever families.
Because normally once a kid hits 7 years old, they just basically stay in, you know, in foster homes and they never get adopted and they just age out of the system.
And the then commissioner of Child Protective Services, Administration for Children's Services in New York City, was basically cutting their funding in half. I don't know the whole political reasons, but it wasn't based on merit. And it really upset us. And so we were like, we got in contact with the people who run it, and we said, we're going to put this on Broadway. And we wanted to do it before the city council, their fiscal year ends June 30th. So we were like, you know what, let's do it at the end of June. Maybe it'll turn, you know, turn some minds towards restoring some funding. And so, and of course, the best way to do it is to do it on Broadway. And we knew that there had never been an event like that for foster care on Broadway. So we're like, we're going to do it. And this, by the way, is early May. Mm-hmm. And so we talked to
we won't say high, but really high power, kind of like Ricky and Glenn, but not Ricky and Glenn. People like that, that produced Jan. So uh-huh. We said, we have this idea, we want to do it on Broadway. And they were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You need at least a year. You start discussing it 12 months in advance, 11 months, you then pick the, we're like, okay, click. And then.
and so we called some friends, because it always helps if you've got some quote unquote A-listers. Mm-hmm. And Tina Fey said yes right away. And then everything sort of fell into place. And we did the concert on Broadway at the St. James Theater the last Monday in June, raised $500,000 for the organization, and they're still around and thriving. And but the show ended with Let the Sunshine In.
So it's a combination of story. A, ended with that. B, they told us we couldn't do it in 6 weeks. Right. I'm like, please. So I'm ADD. Like, everything is fast for me. So when Ricky's like, you got to put together fast, I'm like, don't worry, it will be really fast. By the way, can you maybe tell us that we're doing it? Because then it'd be even faster. So now it's literally Friday afternoon, and it's like 1 o'clock, and he writes and he says, well, what do you, he goes, if you could think of Seasons of Love or Let the Sunshine In, which one would you like better? So James and I called our director, Shelley Williams, who we work with a lot.
And who directed Georgia on My Mind.
And she said, well, she goes, which one's more of a call to action? And I said, well, Let the Sunshine In is a call to action, because it's like, come on, like, let in this light. I said, but Seasons of Love really represents what we've been through, like with the pandemic, and we're learning how important family is and love. And she's like, you're right, they're both great. I'm like, yeah, they're both great. If only we could do both. Wait a minute. And that's when we were like, we're literally going to put both together. And we wrote to Ricky and Glenn, and both Ricky and Glenn wrote back with such nice, like, this is such a fresh take. What a great idea. They mm-hmm. were so supportive and so great. And that was finally our go ahead. And then poor James, basically, because they said, you don't ask anybody until we've given you the go ahead. And then, by the way, once you ask them, they all have to be vetted.
And of course, I had already started, because we had so little time, I had already started asking people. And Ricky wrote and said, you shouldn't be asking people, but I already had, you know, to like, because yeah. we were under such a time crunch, and we knew we wanted people who either had been, because we know the importance of vetting, because we had to go through that for the Democratic convention.
Right.
But we knew that, like, okay, maybe some of the people who did What the World Needs Now Is Love, you know, then, who had been vetted, people who had done George on My Mind, just because we love the talent. It was really important to us that it was a very diverse, representative group mm-hmm. of Broadway and of America. So that was really important to us. And so, you know, we really expanded, and we worked hard to make sure that that was the case, to try to get everyone represented.
It was amazing. The dance segment at the end, oh my God, it just was so spectacular.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I was suddenly thinking, I was like, this is Broadway. Like, every video has been so, you know what, probably Music in the Mirror probably really inspired me. There's a great video that was made for American Dance Machine that Donna McKechnie worked on, of like 20 different people doing the Music in the Mirror. It just came out 3 weeks ago. So videotaping dance was on my mind. And when we were doing like the Sunshine, and I'm like, we could really have some dance in it. So I just texted Charlotte Demboise, and I said, hey, would you just do like 20 bars of Let the Sunshine In? And she's like, well, I just sprained my ankle. She literally is full sprained ankle doing that. And I was like, well, could you try anyway? So she literally did it outside, videotaped herself, sent it to me with a sprained ankle. And by accident, her friend had filmed it with the iPhone vertical instead of horizontal. So I wrote back and I was like, we can't use this. And she wrote back all capital letters, I'm going to effing kill you. But then she redid it. And then the last person we added for dance was Cheetah Rivera, which was post vetting. Hmm. And poor James had to work his wiles again.
Yes, I wrote to the folks with Ricky.
It was Monday now.
And
basically.
It was, and everyone had been vetted, and I'd already been told, that's it, that's it, that's it. And so I basically, you know, I just wrote and I said, basically, Cheetah Rivera is an icon. She's the only, and then I still got a no. And I said, which I get, you know, I get it. But I pushed. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to push because it's important. I can't have, look, we're friends with Cheetah. I'm very happy to say we're good friends with her. And I also knew, you know, you're also dealing with, it's Charlotte Demboise, but you can't have a video with Charlotte Demboise and Cheetah Rivera is available. did not have her. And so I hauled out the whole, look, she's the only musical theater actor who has the Presidential Medal of Freedom given by President Obama. You have to have her, please.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's vetted. Yeah. I have to tell you, Glenn snuck a little cameo of me in one of the segments where they sing Lovely Day. And all the little people, me included, in that little thing, everybody had to be vetted. So the vetting thing is like for real. And for anybody listening to this podcast, we're saying a lot of, we're talking really fast. Just had to be clear who all the people are. So Ricky Kirshner and Glenn Weiss produce and direct, Glenn produces and directs the Tony Awards. And they did the inaugural events. And Glenn happens to also be my fiance and Ricky is his producing partner. So now you know who's who.
And James is my husband.
So let's just segue for a second. You guys are married. You've got a daughter. You work together. And I have a little experience with working with my, a partner. So that you're living with. What is that like for you guys, working and living together? And how do you manage everything, especially this last year?
Oh my gosh. Well, look, we have our ups and downs. I think ultimately we respect each other as people and our
as
talents
artists.
And as artists.
We never disagree in the long run on anything artistic, ever.
No.
It's just to get there, you have to deal with my horrible personality. So it's more like James is much more easygoing and I'm much more quickly opinionated. And then James just sort of deals with it, and then we come up with a conclusion, I'd say.
And I would say that the trajectory of it over the course of the pandemic, Jan, has been more of me like calling him out on it early. And I'm like, you know what? If this marriage is going to survive this pandemic, you gotta do this, you gotta not do that, and so on. And feel free to tell me the same thing, but that's the only way, because you're right. It's a lot.
Because my sass, like I've taught him to use more sass, like. Like, let's say Chita Rivera's birthday is coming up, and he called Chita's friend and assistant, and he's like, Chita Rivera's birthday, Chita's birthday is coming up and starts in the house. It'd be great if we did something. Yeah, did something. And I was like, why don't you literally say, can Chita make an appearance? So it's like, that's where, like, I'll teach him my sassafras, and he'll teach me to maybe be a little bit nicer. And that's kind of how we're working.
Right. And because there were times during the week, just this past week, that you were like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, or it's not going to happen.
I just felt very nervous about the final results.
You were nervous.
I was very nervous about the final
results. I trusted based on what we've done before that it will all work out. And I also trusted that I know that Ricky and Glenn do amazing work, and so they wouldn't allow something that wasn't great to be on the show. So I figured all of those things, I was just like, okay, I'm not going to worry about it.
And just for people listening, I'm not one of those neurotic, oh, this is going to be bad. I normally trust my instincts. But Seasons of Love is a group song with 15 people singing in unison. It's not a solo.
Right.
So to have these weird voices going like, in inches, in miles, I was like, this is going to sound crazy. I was really like, these are not for solos. And that's why I was getting really panicked.
Because we were getting the tracks, of course, of someone just singing in miles or whatever the lyrics were, or in inches. And separately,
they sound crazy.
They sound like, what?
Yeah, like it's not, there's no line to it. It's just like cups of coffee. You're like, oh my God.
But when you put it all together.
With the visuals,
it's like, oh, this is beautiful.
Right.
Yeah, so it did work out, but we both build each other up. And I think we work really, really great together.
And who cooks?
I do more cooking, but I'm also really weird. And I have like all these diets. I'm always on a diet. So basically, when James wants a normal meal, his mother, who lives in an attached house, will make him something normal.
Thank God for my mom. My mom basically has fed me through the entire pandemic.
Yeah.
Wow. That is no joke. And she's been very supportive of, like, if we're really overwhelmed with a project like this past week, she'll literally do our laundry. Like, she's been very supportive and helping. But she does demand that I play 3 games of Rummy Cube with her every night. So even in the midst of everything, I got to do it.
He's not joking.
And by the way, I probably owe her, Jen, about 9 games, because it was really exhausting the last several days. I owe her probably about 20 games.
You know what though? That probably gives you some good balance. And what about what about your daughter? Is she, I saw her in the video though.
She's really supportive of all of our artistic stuff. She loves it. She's always been political, but she's gotten super political, which we love. Our hair looks crazy right now because she's not home. She's actually staying at her mom's right now. So like she has a cosmetology license from Aveda. So she'll do our hair. She like makes us look amazing. And she's super supportive, but there was a lot of, can you please just do the dishes?
And the
answer is always no.
So I just want to talk about one thing, because you've talked about your mom and now we're talking about kids. You know, one of the things that I think has been interesting in this podcast is a lot of people have said that the reason that they are the way they are today, in terms of being philanthropic or socially conscious or whatever, is because of the way they were raised. Mm. So some people have said they were raised and they had a model, you know, role models and mentors in their parents who showed them how to be philanthropists. And others have said actually the opposite, that they came from families where it wasn't happening. So they really doubled down and wanted to be like that. So I just wondered, each of you, how do you feel like your background, your upbringing has contributed to the amazing and enormous amount of philanthropic work you guys have done and the enormous work you've done with social impact?
Well, I can answer that first. I would say for sure my upbringing did, because I'll start to cry, because it's been such an emotional 5 years, and then it was such a beautiful culmination on Wednesday. But I was raised by a single mom, and a single mom in Texas in early 70s, a woman who had not been married to have a baby, was very, very rare. And yet there was no shame. She raised me. We lived with my grandparents until I was 5. And I grew up from a very young age. My mom was like the top person in her congressional district who was writing letters to her congressman opposing the Vietnam War, opposing Richard Nixon. In fact, and I remember literally her congressman came to the door to visit my mom because she had written more letters than anyone else.
Wow.
You know, so, and it was definitely I Am Woman, you know, like those type of songs playing in the house all the time. So I definitely was raised with that from her, for sure. But also, it's like, you know, my mom later on married someone who was abusive. And, you know, so there was domestic violence that I saw growing up. And many of friends and family had been sexually abused as kids. And so, and we lived in a house that was not nearly as wealthy as others. And money was always an issue. And I saw the injustices growing up in Texas. If you were Black or gay, or you basically were not a white Christian. And so that impacted me greatly. And so I have no doubt that had an impact for me, for sure. For sure.
Now I have tears in my eyes. What about you, Seth?
I grew up very wealthy and Protestant.
Brother.
No, definitely my parents. I mean, my parents were always talking about how they did this thing called the Anti-Poverty March in the 60s, and they were marching against the Vietnam War. So I always felt like I grew up with these liberal parents. My dad was in the Democratic Party. He like ran in our town. So it was always that sort of liberal march against what you don't believe in. My parents had a lot to do with forming the teachers union because they began as teachers. And so I always had that sort of like stick up for the underdog. I think also growing up gay and Jewish, I always felt like the underdog. Like I just hated that every TV show always had Christmas was always celebrated 100%. There was never any acknowledgement that you could be anything but Christian. So I always was like, just always felt you had to fight if you were the underdog. So I always had that fire in me. And then when I went to college, I went to Oberlin. We had winter term projects. And my first year, or maybe my second year, I was like, I've always wanted to play Rhapsody in Blue with an orchestra. So I just put a sign-up sheet and I got this big symphony orchestra together of like, you know, people my age, but they were brilliant musicians, and I played Rhapsody in Blue. And I was like, wow, you could just do something yourself. So I think the combination of believing in these liberal values and fighting for it, but also like, God, you could just put together something with a lot of talented people and people will show up, made me just start doing all these events where I'm like, I'll just do it. Like, that's always been my theory. It's like, let's, like the foster care concert, like, let's just do it. It's not hard to get a bunch of people. As long as you have good taste and you have talented friends, like, you can do it.
I think that you are such a do it person, and the balance of the two of you, I think, where James, you kind of help figure out the logistics in the way, you know, but you're such a great combination. But I think that idea of just do it, you know, is so important. And I think a lot of people just get stuck. Like they may have the desire, they may feel it, but they don't take that final leap. And you are not risk adverse at all, either of you, which I think is so admirable that you just go for it every time.
By the way, that's not to say I'm not phenomenally insecure and I don't think, oh my God, this is going to be horrible. Like I'm not one of those, I know this would be amazing, but I agree. I don't like waiting. And that's probably part of my adult ADD.
Also, you know, ADD has definitely some good side effects too, you know,
right? It really does.
Get shit done. you know, Seth, you've done so much. I mean, I was looking at your bio and it was like, it was mind blowing to me how much you have done and what an important part of the Broadway community you really are. And I just, you know, your work is so prolific and even like the SiriusXM radio show, which I'm now embarrassed because I'm sitting here interviewing you. We should be interviewing somebody else.
I love it. It's a nice change.
And you've written books. You know, what motivates you and what inspires you to in your work?
It's so interesting you say that. If you want like a literal answer, like what inspires me, like definitely when I go to a bookstore and I see book covers, I get such a feeling of like, oh my God, I want to write a book. Like I just love when I look at a book, I just get so excited about writing. So that always inspires me. That's how I wrote my first book. I think it was The Nanny Diaries. And I was like, you know, the inside world of being a nanny. I was like, well, what about the inside world of being on Broadway? And that's when I wrote Broadway Nights. So I love just seeing pretty covers. It really makes me feel extremely creative. I get a kick out of it. I mean, I do it because it's fun. I mean, that's really it. I feel like I've been very lucky that everything I've ever done has been fun. And when people say to me, oh, you work so hard, I'm like, I'm not working in a coal mine. It's like, it's all fun. I love doing the things. I mean, the one thing I didn't like was when I worked at the Rosie O'Donnell show because it was all day long. I didn't like having to be somewhere from 7 a.m. to 5. That I can't stand. But if it's an hour here, an hour there, like I absolutely love it.
But that did get you nominated for a few Emmys, right? 3 Emmys?
Mercy Buttercups. Well, thank you for bringing it up. Yes, it also got me to write the opening number to the Tonys twice. Speaking of your husband, I got to write two of them.
And James, you know, same for you. You've done so much work, and you've done so much, you know, philanthropic work and charitable work. So it's, you know, I think in some ways, you know, Seth is so out there, and you're sort of the, in some ways, the unsung hero. You know,
thank you.
But I feel like it's important that everybody see the team here, the teamwork that you guys have. Let's talk a little bit about Stars in the House because. Okay, that's insane. Every day a concert? Like, how is that even possible? Can you walk us through like how you book it, how you think about it, how you, you know, produce it? Like, how does that happen every single day?
It's mostly James.
It's funny because we're actually taking off. It'll be our first full week off. And when I say off, it's not really off, but it's the first full week we're not doing the show because we're going to have guests.
We're off from 8 to 9 at night. I'll say that's where we're off.
And me booking. So actually maybe for me, it'll be more of a time off. So I'm busy booking for the next couple of weeks and trying to get ahead. But, you know, we started Broadway Shut Down on March 12th and we started Stars in the House on March 16th. And, you know, back when we were all a little bit naive and thought that it would only, quote unquote, be 6 weeks, you know, 10 weeks tops, we thought, oh, we can do two shows a day and every day because we knew that it would help combat our depression or anxiety about what was going on. And we sure as hell were not going to go anywhere. So it was sort of like, what else are we going to do? And so we just started and also we wanted to give our friends a place to come and share their talents, their stories. We thought it would be cathartic.
Yeah.
And so we started booking
them. Can I just ask, because you talked about depression, anxiety, catharsis, all the things that a lot of us are feeling, and has it helped? Like, do you feel like it gives your days purpose and has it helped?
Specifically?
Yeah.
I remember once saying to my therapist, I was like, oh my God, why can't I just marry someone rich so I don't have to work? And she was like, you would kill yourself if you weren't working. Yeah. So if I didn't have these things to do, I don't know. It's quote unquote dream to sit around and read, but I would hate it. So 100%, it's kept me from being depressed. What about you, honey?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's totally given us a purpose, and you know, we didn't know it would become what it became, but definitely in those early days, it was just nonstop. But it really wasn't that hard to come up with show ideas. Especially when we started doing like TV and we added TV to the mix.
And that was James. James said, he goes, people are so anxious. He goes, they need to have, he would call it comfort TV. He goes, seeing these casts of TV shows you love is comfort TV. And that was a great idea from James. And that really blossomed the whole show.
Because it allowed us to reach an audience who doesn't know theater, who had never heard of the Actors Fund before. And because obviously it allowed, you know, Broadway, out of all the entertainment mediums, doesn't necessarily get the same amount of love and attention as the others. And so I thought, well, with TV, we'd get more publicity for the show and the Actors Fund.
And therefore more money.
And therefore more money, which is what ended up happening. And we knew people, like we you know, knew Mary Lou Henner. So we were like, well, can you organize the taxi reunion? And she said, yes. And we know David Hyde Pierce because he's done Broadway. And he was like, okay, I'll get the Frasier cast together. And he did. And it just sort of like went kind of like that.
I mean, I'd say if you want to have any dish, I'm definitely surprised that we haven't had more, maybe people in positions of power reach out to us and say, hey, do you want to have our show on? Mm-hmm. It's basically been us reaching out to everybody.
And or actors reaching, you know.
Everyone, actors 100% have reached out. Mm-hmm. But I would have thought that more other people would go like, hey, here's my TV show. Here's my Broadway show. What do you want? But instead, it's basically been the sound of silence. But, you know, I guess it's all good. It would make our lives easier if more people reached out to us on that end. But definitely the actors, everyone has basically said yes to us. We haven't had any no's. I mean, it's, you know, and we don't really run out of ideas. I keep thinking, oh, that's it. But then like another great reunion happens or another great person comes on.
Right.
Well, you've brought, you know, I mean, so many, everybody's suffering from grief and from anxiety. And I think you've helped so many people feel better. And consider this a little bit of a microphone then, pun intended, to like people reach out to Seth and James if you've got an idea, you know, talent, come on, let's do this.
Yeah, a lot of people reach out as audience. They're like, hey, what about a reunion of? And we're like, great, who do you know? Like, you know,
right.
It's always us making the cold call, but it's, you know, it's been great. And we've had people come on more than once. Like we've had Scandal come on and now we have the rest of the cast of Scandal coming on. So it's like, we definitely have repeat people.
Yeah. I love the Scandal ones. Norm.
Oh yeah.
Tony.
We're obsessed with that show. Yeah. Oh my God.
So just talking about the pandemic and the situation we're in, and obviously they're saying it's going to get worse before it gets better, but you know, how do you guys feel about, I mean, you've helped a lot of Broadway people sort of, again, keep their hopes up, but also give them something to do and raise money for them. How do you, you know, how do you envision this year?
Oh, well, continued updates from Dr. John LaPook. We can't talk about Stars in the House without mentioning him, who donates his time, is there basically on every show giving us updates. And I'll say that it's definitely made me feel better having him as a resource, because he does know Dr. Fauci and he does know the people at the top of healthcare in this country and what's going on. So to be able to have, a lot of times he's broken stories that have not been on CBS News. He's the chief medical correspondent for CBS News. He'll literally break stories on Stars in the House before he gets to CBS News. So that actually helps having that. We're still, I will say, who knows? Broadway right now is, I guess, scheduled to open June 1st. I don't know if that's going to happen. I can't imagine that it will. And I think most people don't. So I would imagine in the fall. And we are determined to keep doing this until then.
Until
theater comes back, and Broadway specifically. But I don't know. I mean, to answer your question,
we're not going to stop. I mean, you know what? I really keep forgetting what month it is. Like, it definitely has just become like every day is kind of the same, but it's good days. It's not like days are boring, but it just seems like this is just going to keep going until something changes. So that's how I envision the future. Just
right.
The schedule is very, I kind of like the set schedule. I mean,
and it's comforting to me. Like right before we came on with you, Jan, I was emailing with Bebe Neuwirth about doing a show dedicated to Anne Reinking, and she's mm-hmm. going to put it together. So to be able to do that to, you know, Bob Avian, who just passed away, you know, he was on our show several months ago. And so to be able to pay tribute to him at the top of the show and show a clip from when he was on Stars in the House is very special and meaningful. And an honor, really. I mean, to be able to do that.
How do you think Broadway is going to change when it comes back? I know there's a million committees and people working on it, but do you guys have any like feeling how, when it first comes back, how do you think it's going to happen? And what changes do you think there'll be?
I mean, certainly diversity is really on people's minds. I think you're not going to be able to get away with, you know, there's been more diversity, but there's going to have to be a lot more when Broadway comes back.
And specifically behind the scenes, I would say an emphasis on behind the scenes, both creatively, mm-hmm. crews, on the
musicians.
Yeah, everything. I think that's going to be, now that we do have a new administration and so much of the focus of our friends, specifically in the theater community, specifically of color, and allies who've been so focused on having January 20th happen. Mm-hmm. Now their energies, I can guarantee you, are going to be focused, laser focused on these changes between now and, let's say, the fall. Mm-hmm. On ways that I don't even know what they will be, but there will be, you know, I don't want to call it a reckoning, but definitely a correction that's much needed and overdue.
Yeah, you know, so many people have said, and I believe this too, like, this is a horrible situation we're in. It's just, but I always do believe that good can kind of come out of bad too. So I believe that there will be good that comes out of this for the Broadway industry. Absolutely. And for all of us individually.
Oh, absolutely. There's been so much good that's come out of this already. I mean, even these, you know, reunions, like I was able to do a reunion of the musical Carrie.
I was just going to say that. Continue. Yeah, this is a great example.
Well, because I never would have been able to talk to, you know, Betty Buckley in Texas, Michael Gore in Connecticut, Dean Pritchard in California, and Lindsay Haley in London at the exact same time. I never could have organized that. We never thought about doing internet reunions.
But see, not only that, I thought you were going to say.
Okay. And then on top of that, the healing that came from
it,
which you can talk about, James.
No, you know, Carrie is known as a really infamous musical from the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. It opened on a Thursday and basically closed 2 days mm-hmm. later.
Right.
That it was a quote unquote bomb, even though there were many things about it creatively
that were incredible,
that were incredibly brilliant. There was a lot of pain from the creative and cast from that show. And I want to say that probably on Stars in the House, that was the first time that everyone had gotten together, you know, and talked about it at length. And mm-hmm. we're talking about also the composing team, you know, to all get together. And it was just afterward, everyone texted or emailed us or texted Seth and said, thank you so much. And they used the word healing, mm-hmm. that it was like there was some catharsis.
Yeah,
there.
Some closure and therapeutic.
And hearing the stories about what really happened. I mean, Michael Gore said literally the show opened. After the Saturday matinee, they went home to work on the commercial. Like, how are we going to sell the show? They knew they had these great quotes. And when they got back that night, they posted the closing notice. So, like, they didn't even know it was going to close. I mean, I think a lot of people didn't know each other's story because it was closed and they were gone and they never spoke again. So, you were right. A lot of good stuff. Horrible stuff has happened, but a lot of good stuff.
And I would even say, the other thing I'll say real quick is that Stephen Schwartz was on the show a couple of months ago, and it was with the three of the Pippins.
Yeah.
Three of the leading players.
From the original.
From the original production.
Leading players, literally Pippin.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Pippin. I'm so sorry. The Pippins. And they were, I don't think all of them had been together.
No.
And Stephen Schwartz was learning things that he had never knew about, like Michael Rupert's story. And it was really, or John's story. It was
why
really,
Pippin was barefoot. Like, they never knew the stories because John Rubenstein kept getting these uncomfortable shoes and he had literally a diva fit, which he never had. And he's like, I'm not wearing any shoes tonight to punish them. And then Bob Fosse was like, that's brilliant. Keep it. He's like, huh? And it was just fascinating. Like, you know, all these people talking, they've never talked before.
Well, I know I've been much more living in the moment, which is healthier, right? And feeling grateful every day. So for the good stuff, you know, people hopefully will be listening to this podcast. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important is that we talk about like, how can people be more philanthropic, whatever that means. And there's so many different words for philanthropy, or, you know, giving, being of service, social impact, social responsibility, charity. But, you know, I feel like a lot of people don't know how to take that step. And what would, like, if you were going to give, you know, listeners advice on how to, you know, be sort of a more giving person, especially in this time where we are more mindful, and what would you say? Or what advice would you give each other even?
Well, I can tell you this. We've been kind of focusing on this from the beginning, which is to encourage theaters, to encourage individuals to literally, the platform we use is StreamYard, and to literally do what we do. And in fact, that's and meaning having forums of getting together, maybe raising money for their own theater, their own nonprofit. It's a great platform because you can show video clips. We're not paid spokesmen, as I've said many times for StreamYard. It's just a great platform, and because you can stream out to YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, and that's what we found has happened, including, you know, with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. Mm-hmm. I helped tech. I had the honor of like being the tech guy for them in July, Black Theater United specifically, when they had Stacey Abrams on and Sherilyn Ifill and Viola Davis. And at one point, Sherilyn Ifill, who's the head of the Legal Defense Fund, said, "What is this platform you're using?" And I was like, that's the question I've been waiting for. And I said, well, and I told them, and guess what? The forums that they've been using since have been on StreamYard. And so they're doing more of these virtual events.
They're so easy. And it's really, James, trying to say, support your local theater.
Exactly.
Broadway is going to come back. Like, I am not worried about Broadway.
Right.
But all these theaters across the country need support. So wherever you live, reach out to your local theater and just be like, how can I help? But like James said, it's so easy to put on just a little virtual show. Just put it on, even if you don't raise any money, just raise awareness of your theater. You could show, you know, old clips or just pictures of past shows. Yeah, so that's what I would
suggest. And there's got to be, and I'm talking about even community theaters.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, everyone has, you know, video that they've taken, and there's always someone in a community theater who sings. Like, just do it. Do a special, you know, that goes out, even if it's 100 people on your Facebook group.
Yep.
Send it to the 100 people on the Facebook group. It'll be healing for you. It'll be healing for the people watching. It'll help you feel connected during this time when we're so isolated.
Okay, I think we have to put a pin in it because this was a perfect way to end this podcast. I feel so inspired and hopeful. And I will say that on the episode page for this podcast, we'll put in links for many of the things that you talked about and many of the causes. So if people want to check it out, they can go and donate and learn more. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And thank you for everything that you have done over the decades. And particularly in this last year, you have helped so many people through this hard time.
I just want to hire you as my therapist because your voice is so soothing. Are you available?
We'll talk after. Love you guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Broadway Gives Back. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network, produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals, with Brittany Bigelow, and music by Eric Becker at Broderick Street Music. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, and friend, Jim Lochner, and to Katie and Yo at BPN, Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency, the Charity Network, and to my fiancé, Glenn Weiss, who is always my consultant. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.